Before I begin speaking, I'd like to ask for the blessings of the assembled Vaishnavas, specifically God brothers and God sisters of my spiritual master. It is only by your well wishes and kindness and grace upon me that I'm able to speak something, hopefully to inspire you in your Krishna consciousness. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading from the 4th canto, chapter 18, text 21. Yaksharaksham Sibhutani Pishacha Pishitashanaha Utesha Vatsa Dubuhu Kapale Kshatta Jasavam Daksha Rakshasmi Bhutani Pishacha Pishitashanaha Utesha Vatsa Dubuhu Kapale Kshatta Jasavam Daksha Rakshahamsi Bhutani Pishacha Pishitasanaha Utesha Vatsa Duduhu Kapale Kshatta Jasavam. Anybody else? Aksharaksham Sibhutani Pishacha Pishitasanaha Utesha Vatsa Duru Kapale Kshatajasavam. Anyone else? Yaksha, the Yakshas, the descendants of Kubera. Rakshamsi, the Rakshasas, meat eaters. Bhutani, ghosts. Pisacha, witches. Pishita, asana, who are all habituated to eating flesh. Bhutesha, Lord Shiva's incarnation Rudra. Vatsaha, whose calf. Duduhu, milked out. Kapale, in a pot of skulls. Shataja, blood. Ashavam, a fermented beverage. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Then the Yakshas, Rakshasas, ghosts and witches, who are habituated to eating flesh, transformed Lord Shiva's incarnation Rudra, Bhutanath, into a calf and milked out beverages made of blood and put them in a pot made of skulls. Purport. There are some types of living entities in the form of human beings whose living conditions and eatables are most abominable. Generally they eat flesh and fermented blood, which is mentioned in this verse as Shatajasavam. The leaders of such degraded men, known as Yakshas, Rakshasas, Bhutas and Pisatas, are all in the mode of ignorance. They have been placed under the control of Rudra. Rudra is the incarnation of Lord Shiva and is in charge of the mode of ignorance in material nature. Another name of Lord Shiva is Bhutana, meaning master of the ghosts. Rudra was born from between Brahma's eyes when Brahma was very angry at the four Kumaras. Yaksha Rakshamsi Bhutani Pisacha Pishitasanaha Bhutesha Vatsa Duduhu Kapale Kshatajasaram. Then the Yakshas, Rakshasas, ghosts and witches who are habituated to eating flesh transformed Lord Shiva's incarnation Rudra, Bhutanath, into a calf and milked out beverages made of blood and put them in a pot made of stars. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjala Shalakaya Chakshuranmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Dadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Pancha Kalpaturabhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanabhyo Vaishnavabhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Chaitanya Swami Iti Namine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nidvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyata Deshakarine. This verse and purport is very relevant for devotees. You may think, wow, eating flesh, drinking beverages of blood in a pot of skulls, how is this relevant to devotees? Because we can see the opposite in terms of behavior in the lives of Vaishnavas. Prabhupada describes this diet as abominable, this lifestyle of drinking blood and eating meat as abominable. And if you look at the lives of devotees, case in point, yesterday is Uttarat. Basically from the time we left the property of ISKCON, we were constantly being fed sumptuous prasadam the whole way through till we got to Rajapur. Eatables themselves are divided into the three modes of material nature. In the 17th chapter, Krishna analyzes different items in different modes, and one of them is food. This he analyzes from text 8 to 10. So Krishna says, Yatayamanga parasam bhutipadyoshitam chayat uchishtam apichamevyam bhojanam tamasapriyam. This last line, bhojanam tamasapriyam, it means food. Tamasa, ignorance, priya, dear to those in the mode of ignorance. The translation of that verse, food prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten. Food that is tasteless, decomposed and putrid. And food consisting of remnants and untouchable things is dear to those in the mode of darkness. There is a very lengthy purport to text 10 of chapter 17. Prabhupada analyzes not only the mode of goodness, mode of ignorance foodstuffs, but he also takes this opportunity to describe foods in the mode of goodness and passion. I found a few interesting points for discussion in this purport. The first point is Prabhupada is trying to establish the reason why we eat. Prabhupada says, the purpose of food is to increase the duration of life, purify the mind and aid the bodily strength. That is his only purpose. Interestingly enough, if we analyze the description of foods in the mode of goodness, it is said that such foodstuffs are fatty, wholesome, they increase the duration of life, like that. So it's in keeping with the purpose of eating, according to this purport. Foods in the mode of passion are very burning, sour, excessively salty or spicy, and they reduce the lining of mucus in the stomach and thus bring about disease. Prabhupada establishes what is the meaning of fatty foods. As somebody thinks of the word fatty, immediately they think meat. Prabhupada explains that animal fat is available in the form of milk, which is the most wonderful of all foods. Prabhupada says, the civilized method of obtaining needed fat is by milk, and slaughter is the way of subhumans. Then Prabhupada goes on to describe what it is to eat foods in the mode of ignorance. Specifically, he mentions foods which are not fresh, which are decomposed and putrid. And Prabhupada says, because they are decomposing, such foods give off a bad odor, which often attracts people in this mode, but repulses those in the mode of goodness. There is one pastime, Sankirtan story I must tell here at this point. In South Africa, there was a period of time I was doing Sankirtan inside malls and shopping centers. So to do this, we have to wear jeans and t-shirt to be inconspicuous, wear a cap. And on one particular occasion, in one particular shopping center, in the West, shopping centers are very elaborate. That means in one shop you can get everything from tools and hardware and toys for the children to foodstuffs and paint, you name it, all under one roof. So in one shop, such shopping center, one such shop, I was doing Sankirtan undercover as discreetly as possible. And I walked past two ladies. Before I walked past these two ladies, I was confronted by a wall of unbelievable, terrible smell. It's the worst thing I smelt in my life. And I wanted to walk out of the shopping center, but that was my designated Sankirtan spot, and I said, at least let me endeavor Srila Prabhupada's pleasure. For a few minutes, let me endure. But interestingly, as I was walking towards this wall of incredible stink and smell, which is coming from something called a deli. In South Africa, we have something called a deli, delicatessen. In this delicatessen, there's all sorts of wonderful things like decomposing beef, chicken, fish, all sorts of wonderful things. And they give off incredible stink. So as I was walking past, trying to avoid that area, two young girls walked past me. And it's interesting, they said, one said to the other, can you smell that? So I was thinking about this line by Prabhupada in the purport. Because they are decomposing, such foods give off a bad odor, which often attracts people in this mode. So that was a vigyan experience for me. When it comes to foodstuffs, there's always the question of remnants. And according to this verse, 17:10, we should not take remnants. Prabhupada, however, clears this up. He says here that remnants of food may be taken only when they are part of a meal which was first offered to the Supreme Lord or was first eaten by saintly persons, especially the spiritual master. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's explained that there's three very potent types of stuffs. The first is a food stuff. This is the remnants of a saintly person. Spiritual master, the Lord, some advanced devotee. You can make spiritual advancement by eating this remnants. The second type of wonderful stuff is the dust from the foot of this saintly personality. And the third is the water used to wash the feet of a saintly person, charanamrita. So these three things are very potent. Prabhupada goes on to say, that remnants from other sources are considered to be in the mode of darkness and are more likely to give you disease. Then Prabhupada makes a very important statement about how long after something is cooked you are able to eat it. Prabhupada says, any food prepared by the injunctions of the scripture and offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be taken even if prepared long, long ago, because such food is transcendental. Therefore, to make food antiseptic, eatable and palatable for all persons, one should offer food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Krishna Prasad ki. So, our process is so wonderful. Simply by eating, we can advance in Krishna consciousness. And this is also stated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.234. Atashi Krishna Namadi Na Bhavad Grayam Indriyai Seva Mukha Ijivadir Swayam Eva Skolatyaha. It is said by Rupa Goswami that the material senses are blunt, therefore they are unable to understand the transcendental form, qualities, pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, if somebody engages in purifying the tongue by chanting the holy names of the Lord and taking the remnants of food offered to the Lord, then two things happen. The tongue becomes purified, and also one gradually comes to know who the Supreme Lord actually is. So part of the process of coming to know who the Supreme Lord actually is to honor Krishna Prasada. And that's fantastic. Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple. There are many points for discussion in this purport, but I've selected a few. One of the words mentioned in this particular purport is Rakshasa. And I did a little bit a folio search on Rakshasa, and I came across a nice statement by Srila Prabhupada. This was written in the Back to Godhead of 1996. There's a series of comments by Prabhupada called Srila Prabhupada Speaks Out. Very, very nice in every issue of Back to Godhead, to my knowledge. So this is the conversation from Back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada. In Montreal, a Bengali gentleman inquired, Swamiji, you are using very strong words, fools and rascals. Can it be explained otherwise? Prabhupada is saying, and I replied, no, these are the only words, that you are all rascals and fools. A disciple in the audience said, Srila Prabhupada, you once said, anyone who has a material body is a rascal. Srila Prabhupada, a rascal, that's all. And yet these rascals are trying to make the body permanent, even though they know they cannot. You cannot make the material body permanent. You are not allowed to keep it for more than several decades. Nor will you ever be allowed to do so. Still, punas, puna punas, charvita chavananam, you are chewing what you have already chewed. Repeatedly, these fools go on trying for the impossible. What is impossible? What cannot be allowed? They are trying for it. The disciple asks, well, it appears people just can't accept that all their endeavors to make the body permanent will be defeated. Srila Prabhupada answers, yes, of course, they are seeing, they are experiencing that their endeavors are doomed. History never says that any man has become immortal. Even a great demon like Hiranyakashipu could not become immortal. And what to speak of these tiny demons? One kick is sufficient to finish and kill them all. The disciple says, well, Srila Prabhupada, how is it that the Americans and Europeans especially have become the vanguard of these rascal ideas, this rascal culture? Srila Prabhupada answers, because they are rakshasas, flesh eaters. They are eating flesh and drinking wine and having illicit sex. Rakshasa civilization, Hiranyakashipu civilization. Hiranya means gold. and Kashipu means soft bed. Simply learning how to attain these things is Rakshas civilization. These people are simply searching after an existence of soft beds and gold, sex and money. Srila Prabhupada ki. So how does one become a Rakshasa? You may want to know. In the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there is a very nice description by Krishna of his Aishwarya potencies. Inconceivable. Because Krishna says in 9.4 that whilst he exists in the material world and all beings are in him, he is not in them. And he remains aloof from his creation. He spends most of the beginning of chapter 9 explaining about this inconceivable nature. He used one very nice example, analogy, in the beginning of chapter 9, that's text 6. And he describes his relationship to the material world like that of the sky and the wind. The sky and the wind. To our experience, the thing which we can perceive as the biggest thing in existence is the sky. But still the sky is contained within an upside down bowl of the wind is contained in the upside down bowl of the sky. It cannot pass the limits of the sky. So like that, everything in creation is contained within the potency of Krishna. But at the same time, he remains aloof. So in the 11th, this goes on to text 10, 9.4 to 9.10, about Krishna's Achintya potencies. Then 11 and 12, Krishna is speaking about what happens if people don't accept. Some people, after even reading all these glories about Krishna, they may not accept. And they deny the glory of Krishna as being the Supreme Lord. What does 9.11 say? Abhijinanti ma mudha. That these people, these mudas, fools, they deride me, thinking me to be an ordinary human being just because I assume this form. In the next verse, text 12, Krishna clearly explains what is the consequence of that mentality. If you are considering that Krishna is an ordinary man, what is the consequence? You become Rakshasa, Asura. In fact, Srila Prabhupada, in further discussions on the word Rakshasa, uses the terms Rakshasa and Asura, demoniac, as synonyms. That means somebody who is an Asura is automatically a Rakshasa. Also, in the chapter 16, there is a description of these two terms, demon and devotee. Specifically in that chapter, they are speaking about Asura and Devata, divine and demoniac. Prabhupada explains there that if somebody is not a devotee, take it for granted that they are a demon. This is how uncompromising Srila Prabhupada is in that point. And I was thinking of one famous demon, Rakshasa, and that is Ravana. Ravana, it is described, was a very great Brahmin, highly elevated. That's why he was able to attract the attention of Lord Shiva, because of incredible austerities and penances and very pakka Brahmin. However, also he had great opulence. He transformed his kingdom, Lanka, into a place of gold. So it was known as Shona Lanka. In Bangla, Shona means gold. So like this, he transformed his whole kingdom into a place of gold. However, although he had so much of Brahma Tejas, although he had so much of influence, although he had so much of wealth, one mistake completely disqualified him and made him to be known as a Rakshasa. And that is, he denied the authority of Lord Ramachandra. Immediately, he was a Rakshasa. So there's one nice story in the 9th canto of Maharaj Shodasha. This is another example of how you can become a Rakshasa. So King Shodasha, Maharaj Shodasha, left to stay in the forest for some time. Whilst in the forest, he happened to come across a man-eater, Rakshasa, and he killed this man-eater. The man-eater, however, was accompanied by his brother. Some of the other, the king, Shodasha, pardoned the brother and released him. But this Rakshasa, being of a very asuric mentality, decided to avenge the death of his brother. So he took up the position of a cook in the court, in the house of this king, with the idea of taking revenge for the murder of his brother. Whilst in the house, they received great muni Vasishta. And Vasishta arrived there, and the Rakshasa cook prepared a meal made of human flesh and served it to Vasishta. Vasishta, upon examining the meal, could understand by his mystic potencies that the flesh that was in the meal was of human derivation. And thus he became extremely angry, and he at once cursed King Shodasha. "You dare serve me human flesh? Am I a Rakshasa? So you at once become a Rakshasa." So curse of great potency, because Vasishta was a very potent sage. But of course he was innocent. Later of course, Vasishta came to find out that the fault lied with the cook, who was a Rakshasa and not the king. But it was too late to retrieve the curse. So Vasishta took up a penance of great austerities for 12 years. In that time, this Shodasha was roaming through the forest one day, and he happened to see a Brahmin couple engaged in conjugal affairs. And he pounced upon the Brahmana to eat him, because his Rakshasa bhav was manifesting. The wife of the Brahmana pleaded, "We are about to conceive a child. Please, don't do this." But Shodasha could not check his Rakshasa tendencies, and he pounced upon the Brahmana, devouring right before the very eyes of his wife. The Brahmani, wife of the Brahmana, in turn cursed Shodasha. "Because at the time of me wanting to conceive a child, you have viciously eaten my husband. I curse you. The next time you desire to have sexual union with your wife, at that very moment you will die." So Shodasha, although a king, seemingly very wealthy and materialistic, he had some divine qualities in him. And therefore he was able to maintain that vow until the time of his death. He never took up the position of fathering children. So this is the danger of such situations when one becomes a Rakshasa. But it's a very interesting and instructive pastime. In this purport, there's a mention made of how Lord Rudra was born. Lord Rudra is Shiva, and in the third canto it's described that Lord Brahma, in order to increase the progeny of the world, created the four Kumaras. And the first instruction he gave to the four Kumaras was, "Please increase the population of the earth." The four Kumaras, of course, were devoted to dedicate themselves to a life of lifelong celibacy and had no plans to enter into household ashram. Therefore they said to Brahma, "We cannot do this. We are Naishtik Brahmacharis, we shall remain like that." Brahma was extremely angry. But he managed to check his anger and not say something verbally, offend them, or physically do something. But still the anger was within him and could not be checked, so it emanated from in between his eyebrows. And it's described that a child of mixed red and blue emanated from his eyebrow. And the child began to scream and cry out immediately, loudly, "Who am I? Give me a designation." And because of his Rudra is screaming, Brahma gave him the name Rudra, which means one who cries very loudly. And then he gave him certain places to live. There is a long description in the third canto, chapters 12 and 13, of how and why the Kumaras denied to accept this order of Brahma. Brahma in this relationship was playing the role of a father to the four Kumaras. So let us analyze what was the response of the four Kumaras and why it was that, like that. The four Kumaras decided not to respect the order of their father because they had a higher destiny, a higher goal. Prabhupada explains in the purport of 3, 12, 5. Those who are serious about gaining release from material bondage should not be entangled in the forced relationship of family bondage. People may ask, how the Kumaras could refuse the orders of Brahma, who was their father and above all the creator of the universe? The reply is that one who is Vasudeva Parayana, or seriously engaged in devotional service of the personality of God and Vasudeva, need not care for any obligation. It is described also in the Bhagavatam that if somebody is completely surrendered to the Lord, 100%, what is that? Vasudeva Parayana. Prabhupada decodes that as seriously engaged in the devotional service of the personality of Godhead Vasudeva. Seriously engaged. Under such circumstances, one is not obliged to one's parents, demigods, rishis, forefathers. But the condition is that there should be full surrender. This is a very important point to note, because on the strength of this verse, that give up the worship of devas, don't respect the rishis, don't be thankful to your parents, don't be thankful to the demigods, and just do your own thing. So, loophole for somebody to abuse that statement in the Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada says here, Vasudeva Parayana, completely, fully, wholeheartedly surrender, then you can give up. And this is the promise of Krishna. If Krishna promises something, we take note. So in the 18th chapter, text 66, Krishna makes a great promise. What is that? Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tam sarva papyabhya mokshayishami ashicha. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions, do not fear. So some reactions may be there if we abandon our dharma. We are worshipping this and this devas for so long. I am a devout Christian for so long. I am worshipping my ancestors for so long. I am worshipping the rishis for so long. What happens if I give it up? I will be punished. Krishna says, no. Mashucha, do not fear my child. I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. But what is the condition? Full surrender. Then you get the full benefit. Further on in this pastime, Lord Brahma is thinking, after all my efforts to progenate the world, not enough is happening. Not enough is happening. It's not going on. Procreation is not going on. What to do? Merely by that thought, two living entities emanated from the body of Krishna, of Brahma, and that was Manu and Satarupa. This Manu and Satarupa were the emanations of Lord Brahma's body, and what's very instructive in this pastime is the mood of Manu. When Manu emanated and started to speak, he immediately said to Lord Brahma, he started to glorify him in so many ways. And he said, my dear father, my lord, please instruct me on what I should do. The memory of how the Kumaras rejected his order was still fresh in the mind of Brahma. Therefore, when Manu spoke in this way, Brahma was very encouraged. And then he started to glorify Manu's surrender, and then instruct him on how to progenate. And from him, of course, there were 3 sons born and 2 daughters. Like this, and the progenation of the world began in that way. So Prabhupada makes an interesting comment in the purport of 3.13.10. Prabhupada says that that incident for Kumaras was not forgotten by Brahma, and therefore the obedience of Swayambhava Manu was very encouraging. From the material point of view, the four Kumaras' disobedience to the order of their father was highly abominable. But because such disobedience was for a higher purpose, they were free from the reaction of disobedience. The father is like a spiritual master, actually. He's meant to be a spiritual master of his wife and of his children. So disobeying the orders of the father is as good as disobeying the orders of the spiritual master. Immediately one pastime comes which my Guru Maharaj speaks about. My Guru Maharaj gave class once. Actually they were listening to a tape by Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said in the tape that anyone who is not your son and not your disciple, you are not allowed to chastise. So a family were together. Guru Maharaj was staying in one of my god family's homes in Ermelo in South Africa, and when he was staying there, they heard this lecture. So they had one small daughter, 5-6 years old. So sooner or later she did something mischievous after this lecture was going on, and then the father mildly chastised him. He said, "Oh, didn't you listen to what Prabhupada says? You're not meant to chastise those who are not your sons and not your disciples. And I'm your daughter, so you cannot chastise me." So, the father, my Guru Maharaj says, the father was completely defeated. What can he say to that? This is the potency of a Krishna conscious child. I thought I'll discuss two more points and then we can stop for today. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada makes reference to Lord Shiva as Bhutanath, which means the master of the ghosts. Also in this third canto, there's a description of the pregnancy of Diti, untimely pregnancy of Diti. Diti, it is described, was extremely agitated by sex desire, and she approached Kasyapa Muni, who at that time was in deep meditation, performing his brahmanical duties. He tried to console her by logic and philosophy. "I'm in the midst of my prayer and puja and worship of brahmanical performances. Please, please delay. Also, it's not an auspicious time. It's the evening. And at this time, Lord Shiva is going around. He's followed by many bhutas. And also, this is not the proper mood in which this should be done." Diti, however, persisted. It's described in the Bhagavatam that she caught hold of his cloth just like a shameless prostitute. Kasyapa Muni then gave in, thinking of this to be the will of providence. However, Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, but within him, Kasyapa Muni had some inclination to follow through with that activity of having sex at an improper time. He had an inclination. So although he was seemingly resisting his wife's approaches, still because he had the inclination, he eventually gave up. If he was strong enough, he would have resisted. So in this pastime, they unite, and as a result, who was born? Two wonderful, beautiful, bouncy baby boys named Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, who then proceeded to cause all sorts of nice pastimes and arranged for the advent of Lord Varaha and Lord Nrisimhadeva. So this is the danger of untimely sex. Also, the role of Lord Shiva in this discussion of Kasyapa Muni and Diti is very instructive. It is said that these Bhutas were following Lord Shiva because Bhutas are ghosts, as described in the purport here by Srila Prabhupada. And the existence of the ghost is very torturous. Torturous mone, that the ghost has false ego. The ghost has intelligence and it has a mind. However, the ghost does not have a physical body in which to enact all his desires. So he's very, very much perturbed, very disturbed and agitated. And thus he causes trouble and disturbance by trying to get into bodies of other people. So to assist them out of his compassion, this is the compassion of Lord Shiva, he allows them to enter into bodies. But the bodies of these women, into the wombs of women who have untimely sex, Lord Shiva places these Bhutas. And then upon entering these wombs, they can have a body and then realize their desires. And I can end on a prasadam pastime, with your permission. He says, Jai. So, yesterday we witnessed the glory of Lord Jagannath. He is unlimited, unfathomable, inconceivable mercy. Prasadam was flowing like the river Ganges. So there's one pastime, one history about this Jagannath Prasad. Some time ago, this is described in the Chaitanya Mangala by Lord Chandas Thakur. Narada Muni had a desire. So he approached Lakshmiji and started to serve her very, very attentively and nicely. Lakshmiji of course was very pleased and said, "My son, you have pleased me so much. What service can I do for you?" Narada says, "I want the Mahaprasadam of the Lord." Immediately, Lakshmi's countenance changed and she became very disturbed. She says, "My son, ask me for anything besides this. I will grant any boon to you. Just don't ask this. Because just recently, the Lord was saying to me, I will not give my raiments to anyone." But Narada, of course, was determined and he said, "No, this is what I asked for. You said you'll give, so please, give." So Lakshmi did not want to do it. She said, "Okay, we just wait here." So she went to see Lord Narayan and serve him his meals, and she cooked the meals, prepared the meals and served the meals, and Narayan detected on her face some disturbance was there. And he says, "Devi, something seems to be wrong. What is the trouble?" And then she revealed her heart that, "I have made this promise to Narada and he's waiting there and he wants her remnants. He's not going to leave till he gets it. What to do?" So it is described that Narayan said, "You know, I would not like to give my remnants to anyone. But I'll make a concession, an exception for you. So what you do is when I am not looking, you take away my plate. And then do as you will with the remnants." So she must have went behind his back and tapped him on the shoulder like this or something to distract him. And then with a sleight of a hand, she took away the maha plate. Intelligent woman. Then she approached Narada with the promised benediction. And Narada ate to his heart's satisfaction. As the first morsel hit his tongue, he felt all sorts of incredible symptoms rippling through his body. He began to sing and play his veena in extraordinary ways. He went throughout the universe, through all the planetary systems, through all the planets, till he came to Kailash and he was dancing so ecstatically that Lord Shiva said, "My dear Narada, are you okay? You seem to be in an extremely ecstatic mood. What's going on?" Then Narada, when he, in between dancing, he tried to tried to explain the situation. "Oh, I've had the Mahaprasad of the Lord." And he's dancing and playing his veena. Lord Shiva said, "Okay, but may I have some?" Narada Muni bowed his head. "Oh, I kind of finished it all. Please forgive me." Then as he was standing in this position, Lord Shiva saw under his fingernail, there's one morsel of prasadam. So he said, hold very still. And he grabbed Narada's Muni's finger and stuck it in his mouth. And he ate that prasadam with great relish. It is described after that, Lord Shiva began to dance in extraordinary ways. More and more ecstatic, till the point it was believed he was performing the dance of Tandava. What is that? That is the dance of destruction. And the entire creation was being upset by this mood of Lord Shiva. Even Parvati couldn't pacify him. Come, Shiva, please, control yourself. Then everybody approached Vishnu. Lord, please, he's untimely going to destroy the universe. Do something, please. Before that, there's one part I missed out. I'm sorry. There's Parvati says, so where's my share? 50-50? Husband and wife, you meant to share with me. Where's my share? What about all my children? They don't get prasadam of the Lord. Of course, at this time, there was nothing. Figuratively, literally, there was nothing. The fingernail had been cleaned. And unless you clean Lord Shiva's teeth, you're not going to get anything. So Parvati became very angry, it's described. And you know, when Parvati takes on an anger feature, she becomes Durga and Kali. And the anger was increasing the temperature of all the planetary systems, threatening to burn all of existence. At that time, the demigods approached Lord Vishnu, please do something, she's going to burn the whole world. So at that time, Lord Vishnu approached, please, let your anger be pacified. I will give you Mahaprasadam. Parvati was not pacified. She said, not only me, all my children should get your prasadam. Then Lord Narayan promised, Lord Vishnu promised, I promise you that in the future, I will appear at Neelachal. And every living entity, regardless of their being low-born or high-born or even animal bodies, will get my Mahaprasadam. And to this day, Sri Jagannath Puri is famous for prasadam being distributed in unbelievable quantities. It's offered in unbelievable quantities. Lord Jagannath eats in unbelievable quantities and it distributes in unbelievable quantities. So with that prasadam pastime, we'll end. Thank you very much. Sri Jagannath Paladev Subhadra Maharani Ki, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Sri Prabhupada Ki, Go Premanandi. Are there any questions or comments? Vasudev Prabhu.
You mentioned that food in the mode of goodness is meant to increase one's duration of life. But we also know the statement that we are born with a certain amount of breath, and there is no way of curtailing that or increasing that. Mm. So how do we understand, reconcile these two statements?
I would ask you, Prabhu, respectfully, where's the source of your statement, there's a certain number of breaths?
Of which one?
There's a certain number of breaths. Where's your source?
It is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada on a number of occasions in his purport and conversation.
I would like you to show me that because I didn't find it on folio.
Okay, well...
But what I did
I
find...
Try, yeah. You looked for it in the folio.
In discussion, I would like to say, is that in the purport of, in the verse 17:8, Krishna himself says about food in the mode of goodness that they increase the duration of life, wholesome, juicy and fatty. He himself is saying in 17:8.
Oh, yeah, so I don't doubt that.
There seems to be a contradiction, but...
How to reconcile this statement.
It seems to be a seeming contradiction there.
The Vedas are famous for having seemingly contradictory statements. The matter is how to understand how they are both meaningful.
Okay, but I had a look for that number of breaths. I had a query. I did a search on folio and I couldn't find this number of breaths.
I'll take this as your answer then.
But if there's somebody else who could offer a better answer about the number of breaths.
Hare Krishna. I believe it is the demigods who look after the number of breaths. But when Krishna says something, he should be right. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Whatever.
When you were speaking, I was just thinking about there are some religionists in this world, not our religion, but who say they like to use this quote by Jesus Christ where he says, it's not what a man puts into his mouth that defiles him, but what comes out of his mouth that defiles him. So they use this as an example of doesn't matter what you eat, it matters what you say and the way you act like that. There's people who say like that. So I was just wondering, what would you say to that, or what your reaction to that? We can see people can eat very, very nicely, but they can be sometimes act very demonically. And we can see sometimes people eat very, very demonically, and they sometimes seem to display some good qualities. So I'm just...
Is that it?
Yeah.
In response to the first part of what you asked or said, there's food and there's prasada. Food is eaten by everyone, including animals. And the effect of prasadam, however, is transcendental. Because it's been offered to the Lord, it is transformed into a spiritual substance. So therefore, tangibly, I have seen many instances where just by honoring prasadam, people have advanced in Krishna consciousness. In response to how a person speaks and how he behaves, that's a matter of consciousness. If one's consciousness is very elevated, if he's situated on transcendence, then there's a certain way he speaks and a certain way he behaves. Interestingly enough, in the first response to Arjuna's question about how do we recognize a person in transcendence, the first quality that's listed is speech. How does he speak? First question Arjuna asks. Prabhupada says in the purport that of all the facilities a man has, speech is the most important. And therefore a fool remains undetected until he opens his mouth. In terms of how we speak, speech itself is described in three modes in the Bhagavad Gita. We should aspire for the mode of goodness, at least. So in the mode of goodness, speech is described as truthful, beneficial, not agitating to others, and in regularly reciting the Vedic literature. This is the austerity of speech in the mode of goodness. Excuse me, no, it's austerity of speech. It's nothing to do with the modes. There's other austerities. Austerities is the mind and body. But the austerity of speech is to do these things. Speak truthfully, speak for the benefit of others, regularly recite the Vedic literature, and don't speak to agitate others. These four things are mentioned by Krishna. In terms of behavior, It is very true. Actually, it's a very good point you made about some... Well, you mentioned about what they eat and how they behave. I'm going to talk about what they say and what they, how they behave. Sometimes a person's speech may not match his character. Generally, a person's speech doesn't match his character. However, if somebody is making an effort to get there, that should be acknowledged. I may not be a perfect gentleman or a sadhu, but I'm trying. That should be acknowledged. If you're too critical and say, oh, he's got this wrong and that wrong and that wrong, and you don't see the benefit or the advantage of this person is making effort to purify himself, this is a critical mentality, a fault-finding mentality. It's not a devotional mentality. See the good in others. Also, I actually quoted a verse from the Bhakti Rasa Samhita Sindhu during the class that Krishna's form, qualities, pastimes are not perceptible by somebody who has with the blunt material senses, but they can be perceived by chanting the holy name and taking prasad. And it's one of the themes I wanted to speak about today is appreciating others. If we don't appreciate other devotees, we won't appreciate Krishna. Because if we deride the devotees, deride the society, deride Krishna consciousness movement, deride left, right and center, sooner or later we will deride Krishna. And the consequence of that, you'll fall down into a demonic species of life. You'll fall down from Krishna consciousness. So we have to appreciate the devotees, appreciate that devotees are special, appreciate that Krishna consciousness is special, then you'll appreciate that Krishna is special. In terms of what you mentioned about other people not following this, the answer is that they are seeing whatever they eat as food and it doesn't have an effect on them in a positive way that prasadam does. What was the second question? Oh, I forgot. You asked the second part of your question. One was behavior and one was about eating. Comment. Okay, that's about it. So my comment is that it does matter. Some people may say that's fine. My respects to them, but Shastra says that if you put prasadam into your body, these things will happen. Tongue becomes purified and gradually you come to know who Krishna is. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.2.34. Anything else? Vasudev Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Yes, I just remembered reading in the Harisori Prabhu's biography, the Transcendental Diaries, just only a few days ago, in fact. He mentioned during a lecture about the breath, and he also mentioned, which kind of gives the answer to the question, he mentions that therefore, yogis, they practice restricting their breath to live longer. And having sex, on the other hand, makes one breathe heavily, which decreases the duration of life. And then he even went on, Harisari Prabhu mentions, during the lecture, he even went on by imitating, overventilation, which made everyone laugh.
Over what?
Prabhupada imitated breathing heavily.
Okay.
And everybody laughed. So that gives the answer how something can increase one's duration of life or decreases according to whether one is usually breathing deeply or quickly.
I stand corrected, Prabhu. Thank you. Nitai Kriya Prabhu, welcome back to Mayapur.
Hare Krishna. What we eat surely affects our consciousness, so surely we shall also speak out what is in our consciousness also.
That's true.
So it is very, very important what we eat because it affects our consciousness.
I'll just end with one point related to what you said. he made a statement that what we eat affects our consciousness. That's the essence of what you said. And therefore what we eat affects our consciousness, and therefore it directly, indirectly affects our speech. So I was going to make one comment, and we can end with that. His Holiness J. Beda Maharaj, he teaches some modules of the Bhakti Shastri to our men here for the Mayapur Institute. And he was mentioning about Jiva Vega in the section on Nectar of Instruction. There is this Vacha Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam Jiva Vegam Udara Pastha Vegam. First verse, Etan Vegam Vishaya Pediras Savam Pritivam Sisha. First verse, Sanskrit is a bit rusty there. So Maharaj mentioned that in controlling the tongue, the way to do it is by honoring Krishna Prasad. Then we got into a discussion about traveling. Especially in India, you got to travel for between distant cities by train, maybe for several hours or maybe some days. So what to do for prasad? Do we buy something from the local vendor that comes in if we're really hungry? Do we buy some potato chips in a packet? Or what do we do? Some of the responses from the devotees was, you know, try and reduce your eating for that day or carry some fruit. But the ultimate conclusion was plan ahead and carry some tiffin of prasadam enough for that journey, so that you will not be stranded in such a situation where you don't have anything to eat at all. The reason for that, me bringing that up, is because we find that as devotees, I've had this experience also. Some or the other, if you have something that's a bit borderline, you'll find some effect on your consciousness. Surely, surely. Either something on an aeroplane or something at a restaurant, it may be so-called veg, but it will definitely affect your consciousness. And then other things follow. If the consciousness is affected, then you lose control of your other facilities like speech, action. So the saying that you are what you eat is very important. So put Krishna in the form of Krishna Prasad. So I thank you very much. We'll end here. Shri Prabhupada ki.